Thanks for joining me to this latest episode of Ecosystem TV. I'm very excited to be joined, or actually hosted, by Paul Burton, the general manager of IBM here in APAC. Thanks for having me, Paul.
Glad you're here. Glad to do it.
Thank you, Paul. Look, we want to talk about the year ahead. We want to talk about business. We want to talk about technology. And when we look at the year ahead, there's still a lot of volatility in the market. We're seeing a lot of uncertainty that organizations are faced with. But we also have seen over the last couple of years a much greater acceptance and willingness to turn to technology to respond to volatility and challenges. You're having obviously a lot of discussion with executives across the region. What are you seeing, or how are you seeing the year playing out?
Well, you know, when we look at the year, I think I've seen estimates for economic growth anywhere from 2 to 3% for the world. APAC's a little bit different, but not terribly out of that range. But I've seen no estimate for the growth in technology markets that's less than probably four times GDP growth. So if we're looking at GDP growth of 3%, I've seen nothing less than 12% growth for technology markets. So what that tells me is that companies and governments are willing to invest a tremendous amount of money in technology, and they're doing that for a reason. And I think they're doing that in many ways for a couple of reasons. One, globalization, despite everything we're hearing, is still with us, and it's not going away. It may accelerate, it may decelerate, but it's not going away. And so one of the things that I think globalization is doing worldwide is it's setting standards and it's imposing requirements, especially on developing nations and countries, of which we find several here in APAC. So that's number one. Number two, two-thirds of the global economy probably drives itself from globalization or from digital transformation. And then finally, there's a major structural change in the system that I think is ongoing. Everyone talks about it. It's real, I can tell you. I travel throughout the region. Every government official I talk to wants to talk about skill shortages and shrinking workforces, or you can basically say skill shortages. And so as workforces get smaller because of this, quote, demographic inversion that we're seeing, not only are workforces getting smaller, but then the percentage of the workforce that actually has the skills for digital transformation is smaller even yet. All of this results in a skill shortage, which means it's driving up labor rates, which means it's driving up costs, and CEOs understand this and they're thinking about it. So what does all this have to do with technology? Well, anytime you see technology markets growing much, much faster than GDP, and you see skill shortages, you see CEOs reaching out to look for technology to solve these problems. Automation, data, AI, these things are king. Obviously, a hybrid cloud platform, which is what we talk about at IBM quite a bit, is very important as well, because it dovetails nicely with the solution to the problem, which is labor shortage. So I expect technology investment to continue to grow. I expect it to far outpace GDP growth. I expect CEOs to continue to invest substantially in technology, one, because they have to participate in this global economy, and two, because they have to offset wage inflation. In other words, they have to automate to reduce the impact of wage inflation. Those are the trends that I see. They're not changing. They're deepening. They're taking deeper root.
Paul, you talked about the skill shortage, and I want to pick up one topic. I think one uniqueness for the APAC region, specifically the ASEAN region, is the massive influx of Gen Z population. You know, when you look at countries like India, Indonesia, Philippines, there is probably 40-50% of the population will be Gen Z. In light of most mature economies shrinking population-wise, what does it mean for the economic opportunities for these countries to really become global drivers?
Well, it's a huge issue. So if you look throughout the 15 or 17 countries, depending on how you count them in APAC, the healthiest countries from a demographic perspective are very clearly India, Indonesia, and the Philippines. And one, they all have large populations. India, obviously, by far the largest, but then Indonesia is 275 million or so people. The Philippines is probably 125 million or so people, but a very, very healthy demographic, and to your point, a lot of young people. So the workforces are expanding in those countries. If you look at the people that are in the age cohort of 55 and above, those cohorts are smaller than the cohorts in their 20s and 20 to 25, which means the working class is still bigger than the people that are retiring. So the workforce is actually increasing. So anytime you see a country with an increasing workforce, obviously that's great for demographic, or pardon me, great for economic growth. But then the issue squarely becomes, do they have the right skills for the opportunities that are presented to the economy? And increasingly today, those skills are digital skills, they're technology skills, they're STEM skills, they're data and AI skills. We could go on and on, but, you know, in that area. And so one of the things we're doing as an example, which was recently announced and it's in the press, is we opened the Hybrid Cloud and AI Academy in Indonesia. And our stated objective is to put 100,000 people through that academy as quickly as possible. Now, I know that sounds like a big, bold, audacious goal. It is. But we're not shying away from it. We want to put as many people through the Hybrid Cloud and AI Academy as possible to put those skills into the market to support what we see, or what the country themselves, in this case Indonesia, sees as the economic opportunity that's in hand. They just need the skills to tackle it. So countries that are growing demographically or have healthy demographics and are growing population-wise, they will do well going forward, completely, almost completely dependent on the skills that they're able to put into the workforce. It's a huge issue. It's a huge issue, and it's one that we're taking seriously, very much so, and we're hopefully contributing to part of the solution in Indonesia in particular.
You mentioned data and AI, and specifically automation as well. And so all of our research across the region shows that it's top priority for most organizations, as you mentioned as well. But I think it's fair to say as well, we're still at the very beginning of the journey, and there's a lot more that can be achieved and a lot more value that can be generated. What advice would you give organizations on how to tackle data, AI, and automation?
You got to get the fundamentals right. You've got to get your foundational skills and your foundational capabilities in the enterprise correct. Everyone wants to jump to a particular solution, a siloed solution in many cases, that claims to use or leverage AI. That's great. It has all the right buzzwords included. But fundamentally, if you're running a multinational corporation, as an example, you need certain basic fundamental capabilities. You need a data fabric. You need to make sure that that data fabric supports your cybersecurity strategy or your cybersecurity capabilities. You need AI leveraging all of the data that's made ubiquitously available through your data fabric. You need business or enterprise catalogs. You need metadata catalogs. You need all of these things supported by AI. And then only after you have these fundamental capabilities in place can you talk about layering applications on top of it to do all the line of business functions and the other things that CEOs need to run the business. So I guess the short story is, get the foundational capabilities correct. Don't skip steps. Most important thing I see. I see too many siloed solutions. I see too many point solutions. We need to think broadly across the enterprise and make sure that we have fundamental or foundational capabilities that are horizontally across the enterprise. If we don't do that, we make mistakes.
That's a really good point. And I think the data discussion obviously is not a new one. You know, we've already spoken about this when BI was, one of the hottest topics. So when we talk to organizations, there's a very high intent on data, AI, automation. But when you look at the execution, obviously it's lagging a little bit. Do you have any kind of advice on how to get the journey started, or how to overcome some of this building block or roadblocks to overcome the data issues, maybe some data quality issues, integration across different systems?
Well, I I think that gets me back to the fundamental or foundational capabilities. You know, there's so much data out there, and data, I think we've all heard the metrics. Was it 2.5 quintillion bytes a day or something that's getting created? I don't even know how many. I think that's 21 zeros, maybe more. I don't know. It's a big number. But the point is, there's so much data being created that humans can't keep up with it. And so if you're going to have foundational or fundamental capabilities in place in your enterprise to deal with data, what I'm calling a data fabric, then you better have a substantial amount of AI baked into your data fabric to discover, the metadata, and to impose policies. Impose may not be the right word, to subject discovered metadata to policies that exist. And so the idea here is that your architects and your policymakers will go out and figure out that this type of data element should be subjected to this security policy or this access policy. Well, the problem then becomes, as all of this new data is being created every day, I need AI to discover the data, understand what it's tagged against from a metadata perspective, then automatically apply the existing policy to it to support my security posture going forward. And so if you don't have the data fabric, you don't have the fundamental capabilities in place, you're ultimately going to have susceptibilities to cyber and breach and all sorts of bad things. So again, it comes back to get the fundamental capabilities in place around data, around AI, basic automation, especially around IT operations. And once you get those things in place, then you can start to look at line of business applications that leverage the foundation to drive a coherent business response. So that's really the key, is you got to think holistically. And I think too often, probably because of the way that many enterprises budget, too often they're not thinking holistically. They're thinking in terms of a solution, a budget for the solution, and let's just do it and move on.
Yeah.
But silos don't work well these days.
Yeah. No, that's a very good point. And I just want to maybe leap to the next topic I wanted to talk to you is sustainability. And I think to some degree it's related to the data discussion as well. Sustainability has really matured from a buzzword to basically a key boardroom topic within a very short amount of time. And it comes up in pretty much all discussions that we're having. What do you think is the role of technology to play in the sustainability equation going forward?
Well, I think it's huge. Well, first of all, you know, if you want to know how you're doing from a sustainability perspective, you better have a baseline. And so you'd be surprised how many businesses out there want to talk about sustainability and their commitment to it and becoming carbon neutral, reducing their carbon footprint. They're saying all these things, but if you ask them what their current footprint is today or what their current baseline is today, they don't know. They don't know. And so the number one thing that needs to be done with respect to sustainability is give me a baseline. Tell me where I'm at today, and then let me snapshot that 3, 6, 12 months down the road to figure out if I'm improving or getting worse. So that's number one, and that's 100% based on data. And so, again, we could go back to data fabric, but the point is you need to be able to, you know, ingest all the data in your enterprise to understand what's happening from a sustainability perspective, and then you need all the smarts in terms of AI, and you need, visibility to the local regulations in each geography so you can make comparisons against yourself, your operations, and what your peers are doing so you can see how you're performing. But the name of the game is you got to have the baseline, and then once you have the baseline, then you can start to take actions to understand how that's going to improve. I think you mentioned automation. Automation is huge because if we can automate tasks and as a result of that automation consume less resources, then ultimately that feeds all the way back to the beginning of the supply chain and reduces, you know, the carbon footprint.
You mentioned obviously it's huge and there's a big role to play for technology. Do you think sustainability is here to stay? Because I can look back 15 years ago, you know, there was this hype around green IT. But then, you know, after it cost some money and everything, you know, it kind of slowly disappeared again. Do you think sustainability will be here to stay?
I think it's here to stay. That we may change the way we talk about it.
Yeah.
But if we understand that sustainability means fewer inputs per unit of output, and there will be constant pressure on that to consume less while producing more or the same or more, that's not going away.
Yeah.
I mean, you can think about it. CEOs have always been interested in efficiency and cost reduction. Automation moves them in that direction. Automation also, requires fewer inputs per unit of output, which is good for, you know, sustainability purposes. So I think it may morph a little bit how we talk about it, but at root is going to be, the same issues year after year. I don't think it's going away.
Yeah.
I think we'll get better at quantifying it too, and I think we'll get better at making the case for sustainability, broadly going forward. So I think it's here to stay.
Yeah, and from a quantification point of view, a lot of organizations or countries have pledged, their carbon goals or carbon neutral goals. So I think obviously now it is about the quantification of the journey towards these goals. I want to pick up one topic you mentioned at the beginning about skills and, the shortage of talent. When we talk to organizations, there is a challenge that there's a lot of disruption, a lot of transformations thrown at organizations. So how do they filter through all that and how do they resource the areas that they really want to tackle? And I think it's fair to say that no one single organization has sussed it out all and has all the solutions for all these different drivers. How important is the partner or the technology ecosystem to really look at transformation and innovation on a holistic framework?
I think as particular skills become more and more scarce, relative to where they are today, you're going to start seeing pockets of them develop, and you're going to start seeing, you know, for lack of a better term, an aggregation of skills that does this particular task. And, you know, like attracts like.
Yeah.
Right? And so if you've got a bunch of, you know, people that are good at one particular thing, they tend to want to hang out with each other, learn from each other, and advance their skills and evolve together. That's what services is all about. So I think you're going to see that pick up, and I think you're going to see companies that are going to need to tap in to these skills, tap into these pockets of skills. So I think the services business, consulting, I think is going to do well going forward. I think you're going to see, there'll continue to be big companies out there that do big projects, but you're going to see a lot of boutique companies popping up that are very niche, but very deep in particular skills. And it's going to put a burden on enterprises to put teams together and form teams dynamically for whatever their particular task is or whatever solution they require. I can tell you at IBM, we bring together small partners all the time, make them part of our team, and we go to market that way. We go to market with partners hand in hand. And even though we're a fairly large company, we use a lot of, you know, comparatively small partners in order to put the right solution together at the right time for the client. And so there's a lot that goes into that. So I think the ability to partner seamlessly, to partner dynamically, find the right partner. You know, today we may partner with this company, tomorrow we may compete against them, and that's okay. The important thing is that we can bring teams together dynamically at a point in time for a specific solution for a specific client and make it work. Because the client doesn't want to have more risk because you got five companies coming together, and that's complex when you think about it. When you think about the relationships, the project management, the solutioning, all the things that need to happen, the scheduling, the cost, it's complex. Making that work in this environment is a competitive advantage.
And making it still easy for the client to engage, you know, to this partner network makes a lot of sense. We're coming slowly to the end, but I wanted to talk about one key topic with you, which is leadership. You know, when we talk about transformation projects or transformation journey, in most of the steering committee meetings that I've been part of, technology is actually not the problem. It's about change management. It's about business model management. It's about, you know, different processes, about cultural change in the organization. So obviously, being a very experienced leader yourself, what advice would you give organizations on how to tackle this, or what is required from leadership to really drive innovation?
I think you got to have a clear understanding of where you want to go, not in terms of a very specific, well-defined, precise endpoint, but a direction. You need to know directionally where you're going. Directionally, I know that I need ubiquitous access to data. Directionally, I know I need AI baked into everything I do. Directionally, I know I've got to reimagine my core business processes to leverage the technology that I have. So you've got to make broad statements like that. And then every day you've got to work towards that objective and get closer and closer and closer, understanding that you may never get there, but it's the journey that's important. Because when you think about taking the journey of moving towards ubiquitous data access or a data fabric, moving towards zero trust for cybersecurity, baking AI into everything we do, having, you know, DevOps up and running and delivering applications, you know, bit by bit in containers, et cetera, these are not endpoints. They describe journeys that need to take place. And so we've got to be good travelers. And leaders have to be good at organizing travelers and pointing them in the right direction and modulating them as they go forward. That's what leadership is going forward. Leadership's no longer about analytically breaking things down and solving problems and making decisions. It's about steering the ship, because the ship is moving. Everything happens so fast today. And change happens, well, change is constant, but change happens so fast. And so this idea that we're going to pick a particular endpoint and get there over time, it doesn't work that way. We need to pick a direction and constantly move in that direction. And if it shifts a little bit over time, that's great, but get the team moving.
Yeah.
And be comfortable with that. Be comfortable with, you know, sometimes a lack of structure and a lack of, roadsides along the way.
Okay. It's don't let perfect get in the way of better and still keep moving forward.
That's true. That's true. Evolution is key. Evolution is key.
That's actually a perfect wrap to the session. Paul, I really appreciate, you know, you taking the time to talk to us, for hosting us as well. Thanks, for listening in. I hope you join us soon for the next episode of Ecosystem TV. Thank you very much.